From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of April, 2020. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing. She's in Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'll also update you on last night's executive order from President Donald Trump that authorizes U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue to keep red meat processing plants up and running to protect the nation's food supply. And we'll do all of that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago. May corn today at 304.5, a penny and three quarters higher. July at 314.5, up 2.5. And December futures at 333.5, up 3.5 cents. May soybeans 5.75 higher, $8.31.75 the settlement price. July at 837.5, up 5.5. And November beans at 844.25, 5.25 higher. The bean oil up 48 cents. Bean meal $1.40 higher. July soft red winter wheat at 516.5, down 9.5 cents. The hard red down 6.75 at $4.77. June live cattle at $84.27.5, down 42.5 cents. The August up 25 at $90.77.5. And the May feeders for the day at $118.55, finished a nickel higher. Lean hogs, the May contract up $1.22.5 at $56.27.5. Crude oil about $2.85 higher for the afternoon. Ethanol up 6.4 cents. And heating oil around 70 cents a gallon. That's up around 7.1 cents. We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing, by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time with us this afternoon. Glad to have you on board.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the support and resistance numbers for the week, please.
Well, they really haven't changed much. July, we have support at 295, 274, and 257. Resistance, 329, 351, and 364. And the crossover is at 310. On December corn, 325, 297, and 293. And resistance, 346, 361, and 394, with a crossover at 330. On beans, July support 829, 820, and 805. Resistance, 866, 903, and 926. And the channel is 975 to 819. November, support, 836, 812, 751. Resistance, 873, 891, and 909, with a channel of 1010 down to 833 and a crossover at 881. You notice I had a hard time saying 751. I don't like that 7 in front of anything. I added the Dow Jones Index mostly because I think a lot of people don't realize that you know, the Dow Jones is trading well above 24,600, and we were actually all the way down to 18,213 at one point in time. So we're back 6,000 on the Dow already here. So support for the Dow Jones Index is at 22,551 and then 18,213. Resistance, 25,230 and then 26,888. Crossover is at 21,869.
Is there any relationship between the commodities and the Dow, or very much at all? And I'm just thinking, you know, the Dow bottomed earlier than the commodities. They had a tough week last week and are suffering again this week in part. Any relationship between those two?
Well, there definitely is. I mean, when you look at the fact that the Dow, investors of the Dow use the commodities as a cross hedge. And in other words, you know, if they will either buy or sell in the commodity market to be able to try and produce a better return to their clients, and or to protect things. And so the commodities tend to always be slower to recover, because when the Dow really takes a bang, they come over here and take a lot of their money out of here, whether it's just margin money, whether it's profit money, whatever it might be. And so we really get slammed. And then as the Dow becomes more stable and starts to come back up, then they do less over here. And so then we start to stabilize. But it definitely has a lot to do with what's going on. I think there are a lot of people that don't understand that, you know, that that the commodity markets are used as a hedge against other investment instruments. And, you know, that leaves us wide open to these types of situations.
Speaking of investment money, where did managed money put its funding this week?
Well, they moved around a little bit. They went from 25,000 net long in spring wheat to our soft road week, down to 7,000. So they pulled some of their long positions there. Corn, they added two. They went up to 181,000 short. Beans, they went from even to 10,000 short. Meal from 17 long to 10,000 short. And oil from 16,000 short to 13,000 short. So they bought a little bit of oil, sold meal, sold beans, and sold corn. And sold wheat. So they were on the seller side this week.
It's been raining a lot, but last week farmers were really rolling. The crop progress numbers reflected that. What'd you think of the corn number Monday?
Yellowser. Yellowser is all I can say. I mean, I never, ever underestimate what our guys can do. I mean, it is amazing with all of the GPS instrumentation that we have now and things when you can plant day and night if you need to. It's amazing. But to go from 7% to 27% was pretty darn significant, And beans, 8%. That makes sense, but that's still a really good number to, from a bean standpoint too. So I thought it just goes to say how good our farmers are. There's no question about that and what they're willing to do to get the crop in the ground.
I didn't look. Did you check the North Dakota harvest progress?
They made 3% progress this week. They had four working days actually out in the fields for a change. They've got 89% of the corn done. And so that leaves 11% or about 379,500 acres. Approximately 38.5 million bushels out there, because I only used 101.5 bushels to the acre just because of all the issues. The significant change in North Dakota is the topsoil moisture dropped from 39% excess to 32% excess, and the subsoil dropped from 36% surplus or excess to 32%. So you can tell that they've had a little drier time. They said that they were planning on beginning field work yesterday for the 2020 crop. So we're moving.
Yeah, this morning we are at 100% access, I think, rainfall here.
In a lot of places, here too.
My brother did send me a picture today. Soybeans are up, so they managed to make it through what was a tough rain last night. Let's see, they got planted on the 6th of April there near Springfield, Illinois, so it was good to hear from him that they were up and they're in no-till, so it's tough to see them sometimes, but they're there and up and running.
They're a tough product too. I tell you, I've seen them stand in water and still produce a tremendous amount of beans.
Yeah, they went in good conditions. It was cold, and now he said, "I hope they can swim." So we'll see how that goes. Other things we need to cover up on the fundamental side. So we have export inspections. We need to talk about feed usage because of the Defense Production Act that was put in place by executive order last night. And Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Ag, will be covering that. Why don't you start with those export inspections?
Okay. Export inspections, wheat's running 5% ahead of last year. They were 6% last week. And basically, USDA has them at 5%. So they're right where the USDA has them at the moment. Corn 36% behind, was 36% behind last week, and it's expected to be down 16% for the season. Soybeans 6% ahead, they were 6% ahead last week, and they're expected to have a 2% increase for this year. So I don't know if we'll pull that off or not, but you just really never know.
And then the Defense Production Act, and I want to talk about this in terms of corn usage, bean meal, I suppose, too, simply because last night, in order to keep the supply chains running properly for red meat, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, put into place that Defense Production Act to keep plants open, processing plants, so that red meat would continue. What kind of impact does that have?
Well, that was definitely a huge concern. Yeah, if we start doing that, I mean, we were hearing things in the country of, farmers euthanizing baby pigs, 200-pound pigs The local slaughterhouses, the smaller places, the butcher shops were just packed with people bringing animals in, you know, and so very scary situation. You know, if you remember the beginning of the month, he used the Defense Production Act also to get them to produce ventilators, and it worked very well. Now, everything I read about it, Todd, it doesn't just cover the red meat. It covers chicken, eggs, and pork all together, you know, so it's beef, chicken, eggs, and pork, but it was done primarily because something to do with Tyson Foods Incorporated liability. And so that was standing in the way of them being willing to go forward. And so now with this, this gives them, this would, of course, lift some of the liability.
Brazil and Argentina.
Okay, Brazil and Argentina. Well, Brazil is having just a ton of political chaos. And of course, COVID-19 is wreaking havoc in the economy. They're up in arms. You know, the president, Bolsonaro, made the remark that COVID-19 was nothing more than a little cold, and that was a huge mistake for him because now he is really on the hot seat. And the Brazilian real reached an all-time low against the U.S. Dollar on Friday, and it was at 5.7 reals per dollar. That's a record is what it is. And so, which again makes their the prices of their products go higher and makes us more competitive, actually. So all the ports down there right now are operating normal, with the exception of the fact that they basically are short on containers for meat. And so the biggest problem you can see in the future might be that if union members start to get COVID-19, we could see a whole lot of labor unrest at one or more of the Brazilian ports. I mean, you know, and so that's the thing I think that the Chinese are very concerned about. And that is the ability, and it has always been a situation with South America, their ability to be able make timely deliveries of the products that they purchase. We look at Argentina. They're begging for more water from Brazil. And here's a good reason why. The Port of Rosario's levels right now are at the lowest in 50 years and the lowest ever recorded in April. Now, the water there is one half of a meter compared to 4/10 of a meter last week, and the average is normally 4 meters. So you know how low this water is. So they're only loading out about 1.8 million bushels of beans compared to 2.2 million. So those Panamaxes actually have to travel up to Bahia to top off the load. So, you know, that's not only delaying shipping, it's also adding cost. Their harvest right now at 56% and corn harvest at 34%. So all of these issues down there in Argentina with shipping couldn't be coming at a worse time because about 80% of Argentina's exports move out of those ports on the Paraná River near Rosario. So, you know, they're the largest exporter of soy meal and soy oil, third largest exporter of beans and corn, you know, and so those could all be things that could be supportive to us. They don't have any guidelines for releasing water from the Itapo Dam. And in fact, Jeff and I were there and we saw the Itapo Dam. And so this is a bad situation because Brazil now is going into its dry season and they may not want to release more water just because that dam produces all their electric. And so it's a mess. Economically, Argentina continues to be a mess and they defaulted on $500 million payment last week. So they're beginning their default process, basically, is what it is.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you very much. You have a great one. Take care.
You too. That's Jackie Vegas. She's with Total Farm Marketing. In today's agricultural news, just one item, and I'll read verbatim from the White House news site. President Trump is signing an executive order providing the authority to ensure the continued supply of beef, pork, and poultry to the American people. Under the order, the Department of Agriculture is directed to ensure America's meat and poultry processors continue operations uninterrupted to the maximum extent possible. To ensure worker safety, these processors will continue to follow the latest guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA. Unfortunately, a number of America's largest meat processors and their workers have been affected by outbreaks of coronavirus, COVID-19. In addition, recent actions in some states have led to the complete closure of large processing plants. There is more on how the president is using the Defense Production Act on the whitehouse.gov Gov website. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois and a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, issued the following statement after President Trump signed the executive order. President Trump's executive order, says Durbin, to require meat and poultry producers to continue operations ignores the health and safety realities of this pandemic. The coronavirus is not impressed with a presidential order, and neither are the workers who are risking their lives working shoulder to shoulder on meat processing lines. If the Trump administration would make a national commitment to serious testing and worker protection instead of a mindless mandate, we could bring this valuable sector of our economy back to life. That from U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, in response to the Trump administration's use of the Defense Production Act to keep processing plants open. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On this Wednesday, let's check in with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and here to discuss the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, indeed, indeed.
Well, it's wet. At least where I am, it's very, very wet. Can you tell me about the rainfall overnight in, I think, the eastern Corn Belt?
Yeah, there was plenty of moisture around, that is for sure. This was the last in a series of storm systems of size that will impact the Midwest for a bit. We did end up seeing a fair amount of moisture, not only in the last 24 hours, but portions of the southwest Corn Belt, really from the heart of Illinois back into Missouri and parts of Kansas, have seen a lot of moisture here over the past few days. Totals since last week at this time in central and southern Illinois have run from 2 to more than 5 inches, at least as far as official reports, and I think there's been a few spots that have had 6 inches. The wet weather extends up to the western parts of Michigan and the southeastern corner of Wisconsin, and then does go down into a portion of the Delta and the eastern part of the Southern Plains. And it looks like this pattern is really about done, at least as far as the bigger rains is concerned. We will go back into a northwest flow pattern here over the next week to maybe 10 days, and that's going to push colder air back into the Midwest and push the jet stream back to the south and suppress some of the moisture. Don't get too comfortable with that, though, because we'll go through this whole cycle all over again. We'll bring the jet stream back to the north and bring some warming at some point, and it'll start raining again. But the good news is we've got probably a good 10 days of improving conditions coming up as we move forward through the first half of May.
Oftentimes there is a division between the western and the eastern parts of the Corn Belt. Is that the case this year?
Yeah, we are certainly getting that way more and more. It was just a little while ago that I received my first, or actually it's probably my second complaint out of Iowa about how dry it is. The northwestern part of the Corn Belt, with the exception of eastern North Dakota and parts of neighboring Minnesota, has really dried out a lot over this month. We have seen less than half of normal rainfall in much of the northwest half of Iowa, southeastern South Dakota, a big part of Nebraska, and there are a number of locations in that area that have seen less than 25% of normal precipitation. And so there is some concern about that situation, especially since when we go back into this northwest flow here over the week ahead, we're probably going to continue to suppress the potential for precipitation of significance in those northwestern areas. And of course, this dryness in the northwestern Corn Belt does extend back into hard red winter wheat country, and it has really become quite dry across central and western Kansas, as well as eastern Colorado and many areas southward into the Texas Panhandle recently. And I'm sure a lot of folks are aware of the fact that it's been hot out there. We got to over 100 degrees in the southwestern fringe of wheat country yesterday. That was actually in West Texas cotton country. There's some minor wheat that's produced down there, but it will be in the 90s again late this week in many areas in the southwestern part of hard red winter wheat country, and that is, of course, causing quite a bit of stress for livestock as well as the unirrigated crop out there. So we're going to watch all of the plains and the northwestern Corn Belt as we go forward through May.
Speaking of dry conditions, I think second cropper Safrinha corn in parts of southern Brazil are in need of a drink of water, though they should be in the beginning of their very dry season.
That is true, but they also were a little late planting that crop, and reproduction occurs in May. Some of that crop will reproduce probably in the latter part of May, and that's an even worse scenario because it is the dry season, as you pointed out. We are seeing the topsoil rated right now very short on moisture. The subsoil is marginally adequate to short. We have another 5 days, maybe 6 days of dry weather coming up before there's any opportunity for rain to arrive. The rain that does come is going to occur probably Tuesday through Thursday of next week, and we will see rain in most of the second season corn country. I am not of the opinion, though, that it's necessarily going to be a good, solid drink, and they may still have need for follow-up precipitation for that very late planted crop in order to support its reproduction. So we're going to watch real closely how well that rain gets distributed next week. My guess is places like Mato Grosso do Sul and areas to the south and east from there into Paraná will probably do relatively well with rain. But Mato Grosso, and actually the northern and eastern parts of Mato Grosso do Sul into São Paulo, maybe not so. And they could be dealing with some additional dryness as we go a little bit deeper into the month of May. So we're going to keep an eye on that for sure.
We've also been watching dry areas across Europe and into Eastern Europe, all the way through parts of Russia.
Yeah, that's correct. And with that dryness there is expected to linger just a little while longer. The weather pattern is changing, not necessarily going into a real wet bias pattern, but there will be an improvement in rainfall from France all the way through Poland and down into Romania and from there into Ukraine and farther to the east into Kazakhstan. And so all of this region has had a very dry 30 days. There are many areas across that region that have had less than half of normal precipitation, similar to what has occurred in parts of the U.S. And the outlook, though, is improving. We are expecting scattered showers and thunderstorms to start occurring here this weekend, and will work their way from west to east across the European continent. So most of these areas that have been dry will get a good chance for some shower and thunderstorm activity. Unfortunately, for some areas, the precipitation will be a little on the light side. I think the whole distribution of rain is going to be somewhat erratic. So many areas will do real well, and others may not do quite so well. So we will have to stop and assess that situation at the end of next week and see just how much of the dry region was adequately relieved. But that has been the center of attention for the wheat market here recently because of the dryness in the Black Sea area. Some of that winter crop did not get established well last fall, and they had a little bit of an improvement in soil moisture during the winter, but they've lost a lot of that already. And the only good thing that's happened over there is it's been a little chilly here in the last few weeks, and that's helped to conserve the moisture a little bit. But as it starts to warm up, it darn well better start raining for some of those folks, or there's going to be a shortage of grain production in that area, too.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.